I died when I lost my poncho. I died when I lost my mom. I died when I lost your precious love. Thank God I'm alive.
It's great to be in this little family here.
Right. So anyways, my name's Danny Fisher. You're now entering the Mile High Zone. This is our segment called Kaleidoscope. This is my segment. I'm your host, Danny Fisher. I'm an artist and musician, and I do dishes and clean horse stalls and vacuum just like everyone else. This show is about your creative spirit, celebrating it, promoting it. Sometimes you're going to listen to people give you free tips on how to further your career in arts or music or brewing or whatever your creative gift is, acting, writing. Sometimes the whole purpose is for you to be motivated to get off up off your butt, off your bun cakes, and go do something creative yourself. So today we're here at Cupper's Bistro. They have great coffee, wonderful atmosphere, and a full bistro menu. Big, bright,
and they have two locations.
Two locations, which I don't know the other one, but it's downtown. 258 Lee Boulevard, Prescott, Arizona. And the other one is downtown. I wanted to say it's on McCormick, but I don't quite know.
Find it on the website.
It on the website, cupperscoffee.com.
It's on Cortez.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Cortez between Goodwin and that other Carlton, I think.
That lovely voice you're hearing right now is Jonathan Best. He's just introduced himself in a way, but he knows where the other Cuppers is, so we're in good shape. By the way, if you want to find this episode or see other episodes or listen to more episodes, look up themilehighshow.com, H-I-G-H. And when you're on there, you can help us by clicking on the Amazon link to do all your Amazon shopping. That'll help us keep the lights on. So go to themilehighshow.com and click on the Amazon link. Again, I'm your host, Danny Fisher. We're here today with a legend, nothing but the best for my community and my listeners. This is Jonathan Best, everyone. The way it's going to work is Jonathan's going to let you know where you can find him, and then we're going to start talking. Where can we find you? Do you have a website?
Yeah, my website is jonathanbest.com, and Communicy, which is my nonprofit, is Communicy. Think of it as where music is the key to community. So
nice.
Communicy, communicey.org.
Wonderful. Thank you for that. I'm so glad you're a guest today. I've seen you around town. I've been home from Pennsylvania since April. I've seen Jonathan perform at the Raven. He did a lot with the tsunami on the square and helped donate time and help with that. And I love his, and I called it earlier before we started talking, his beboppy style.
I love it.
Yes.
Be-boppy.
He's no genre, but I call it beboppy doo-woppy.
Beboppy doo-woppy.
Yes. So let us know how long you've been in Prescott and where you came from.
I've been here since 2002, and I came from New York City, just loaded up the U-Haul and drove here.
Very nice. And have you been a performer your entire life? Some people, you know, their parents helped foster the artistic creative spirit in them since they were five or since they were born. And some people notice, like in high school, that when they take an acting, you know, they're in the play and they notice that they can do that kind of thing. When did you know you were?
I think I was like 13. I somewhere between 12 and 14 when I did my first show. And yeah, that's all I needed to do that. I knew this is what I got to do.
Do you remember what it was?
Yeah, it was for like a little community barbecue or something, at the ball field, and one of the older guys let me play the keyboard.
Nice.
And just do my thing. And I got a response. You know, it's like people saw me. It felt like it was like the first time people were paying attention to me.
It's that word from the other culture that you just mentioned before we went on air. You said there's a word in another culture that means both scared and excited are the same word in other cultures. Is that about how you felt, like maybe when you started? Or
comfy? That was a long time ago, and I don't remember. That's a really good question, because I don't remember. If, it happened so quickly. It was like, hey, Jonathan, come on up here and play a song, you know. And yes. He knew that I was writing my own songs, you know. So it's just like, wow. It's interesting to try to imagine what I felt. I don't remember. I know it was the start of something.
Yeah, you just knew. It was kind of like some of those defining moments in your life.
Right.
So I know you do music. I've heard from some other musicians in the area when they let me know who you were and what you do in the Prescott area. Did you write some plays and musicals as well?
I wrote a play. That's true. I did write a play. Mm-hmm. And I've written a lot of music for plays and for movies and stuff over the years.
And what do you get out of it? I know, like, the initial response when you were 13 is you get this attention, and I can relate because I knew I wanted to be an artist in kindergarten, and I had some divining. One was in kindergarten when my parents gave me a lot of attention over this cut paper project, and that one was about the attention. When I moved to Arizona, I moved back and forth a lot when I was a child, and when I moved to Arizona, I lived in Phoenix in Sunny Slope with our grandparents till we bought a house, and it was hot as heck, and I was only 6 years old, and I came from Pennsylvania, and I was a chubby little sweaty little Dutch kid in the middle of the desert. The art teacher took us outside and put us under this pavilion, and the pavilion was metal, so it was like a kid toaster, right? And I already am homesick for Pennsylvania and not knowing my environment, and the art teacher gave me two balls of clay. And the clay made me feel so good. I knew right then, you know, I wanted to be an artist. So throughout life, you get those parts where the community attention feels good and you know you're pleasing people. But do you have any, I want to say self-pleasing, you know, self-pleasing gratification, like why you're into it, what you get from it?
You know, it's like, I feel like it's a real kind of back to the birth connection. It's like this really core thing going on.
Absolutely.
When I'm playing and people are part of it, you know, they're participating. I don't think people know how important the listener is. And so for me, it's heaven. I'm completely, everything is perfect when I'm performing.
It's the joy.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see the extremes from when I'm just with myself and I'm like, I gotta do this and I don't want to do that, and I'm just like, I don't really like being with myself. But when I'm playing and there's people, we're all doing it together, and it just feels completely connected.
That connected to the soul of everything.
That's all of us.
Part of my reason, and I tried to explain this on some of the shows, part of the reason is, you know, we're helping the listeners if they're already in the arts, but they're struggling or insecure, because we all have those struggling moments. I mean, there was a story about Sylvester Stallone when he sold the Rocky. He wrote it. And he sold it.
He wrote that movie?
I think it was it Rocky or another one he wrote? But he wanted to sell the script. And he was like, I'll sell it to you really cheap, but I want to act in it. And the companies were like, it's really great, but no, you're not acting in it. He had no acting experience. Sylvester Stallone literally went out and in front of a liquor store, sold his dog. It was like a bull terrier for $50 so he continued to live. He sold his dog to someone. And a week later, they're like, we'll do it, but we'll only give you this much money. It was like $15,000, and you can, and it was Rocky, and you can act in it. And so he got that $15,000, or no, it might have been 30 or more. He went back to and found the guy that bought his dog, bribed the guy with, like, it took him like $10,000 to get his $50 dog back. And then he promised that guy a part in the movie. So,
wow, he's like, this is like raising my Rocky awareness. Like, I never really saw him. This is beautiful. I mean,
yeah.
I didn't even know he wrote that movie.
Right, I didn't either.
I saw
either.
That movie.
I learned it recently.
I saw it in the theater. I thought it was cool. You know,
yeah.
I thought, this guy is, you know, I like the whole feeling of it. Then he went on to this place that was beyond my comprehension.
Right. Well, there's a lot of punching in there, and me being a mom, I don't like to see that all the time, but it is a very passionate movie, and I can understand. That's like war stuff, too. War stuff is upsetting for me.
Yeah, when he got into the gun. You know, I just didn't like machine guns and stuff.
And Breaking Bad, like, people thought that was exciting.
Never saw it.
Anyway, the point of the Sylvester Stallone story was he had so much belief in this and knew he had to make it, and it's not like he was out getting a job at the local supermarket, which some of us will need to do, and some of us take bartending jobs and stuff on the side to keep us going. We do what we have to. But he believed in himself so much that he was willing to give up his dog, and then he loved his dog. He obviously loved it because he paid, you know, an unreal amount of money to get the dog back, you know. Must be a great dog. But he... The point of the story was that he struggled that much and believed in himself, and look how far he's come. So is there anything out of all your years of your travels and your artistic creations where you second-guessed yourself and weren't sure, or have you just been a power horse pushing through all those feelings since you were 13?
Wow, that's deep.
I'm full of loaded questions.
Yeah, no, I like to load them up. I'm trying to think. I don't think I have a story like that,
uh-huh.
You know, where I believed in myself that much, you know, and I have lots of stories where, you know, the opposite.
That's what, like, I want to know.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I have a good one. Like, I was, like, rehearsing with the B-52s, and, like, you know, I thought I was going to be in the band, you know.
Yeah.
And they asked me, you know, if I could bring my sampler the next time.
Yeah.
And, you know, back in those days, these samplers, these big things, you know, I'd have, it was like kind of, basically, I said, it's kind of a hassle. And, you know, I lost the gig. I don't know exactly why, but I do know that I would do things like that. I would kind of, like, say things that you don't say.
You know, because they were true to you? Like, did you say, oh, shucks, I shouldn't have done that, or?
I think it was a way... I think there was a part of me that didn't really want to be in this realm.
Because, you know, you're balancing your spirit with...
You know, I'd like to believe it's that, really. You know, I really would like to believe that. You know, it's. I think there's also the part that was just afraid of success. You know, afraid of really going all the way.
The self-sabotage.
Yeah, you know.
Fair enough.
It's hard to separate that stuff because now, you know, and it could be a little sour grapes, but I don't like the music industry. I'm really like, I'm
that's down, not I, sour grapes. No,
it, you know, I kind of dropped it, you know, like I actually, you know, I was on the way up to there, you know, being in the, I was in the arms of the whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I dropped it after that, you know, like with David Byrne was the last big time kind of gig I did, and the next one after that I got kicked out just before the tour for I don't know why.
Because you're a human being, maybe.
I think maybe
sometimes
it was.
That
you know,
happens.
Let's
yeah.
go with that. You know,
no,
like that
real.
I didn't it wasn't what I where I wanted to go, you know, and the next thing I knew, I was in Prescott. And going on a whole new thing, and then going to Kenya and doing, you know, stuff that was completely kind of unrelated to that whole world.
And your knowledge and what you got from Kenya is you wouldn't have got that if you were like, sure, I'll bring out all my equipment and kill myself. You know, like, not literally kill yourself, but, you know, you didn't want to do that. I have a thing where I had children and funky divorce and all that stuff. And I was at a peak where I had a gallery and a studio in Pennsylvania, and we grossed $100,000 our second year, but we were killing ourselves and had no time for the kids who were hurt inside from a natural, you know, circumstance, and we wound up closing the gallery, and people were like, oh, so, you know, and then there are some people that are like, oh, well, I knew you were never going to make it, and some were like, oh, it's such a shame, you know, but I did it for the kids, and here being in Prescott, and I know that you enjoy Prescott too, like, I've had an easier, my kids are getting older, but I have an easier balance. I didn't used to be able to balance it so much where I'd wind up, if I was a power horse and working 60 to 70 to 80 hours a week, I'd turn around and snap on my kids. But then that caused more problems where I'd have to call off work the next week because my kids aren't taken care of, you know, and that was a struggle I had to have. But it sounds like you always, like, and that's a compliment for you, but it does seem like you've always had the balance of knowing how to stay true to yourself but still do your art form, and it doesn't sound like you really had a lot of hang-ups about that. You may call it sabotage, but it sounds like you were just listening to your inner voice, and sometimes you listen and then after you go you
right, yeah,
shucks, I hope if I got that, you know.
Yeah, the higher self actually I think literally is works on a higher level that we don't always understand, you know, like it's making these decisions for us that it was like, why did you do that? That makes no sense. But actually, you know, what you're saying makes me realize that, you know, I look back and a lot of the stuff that I was creating you know, through the 80s, I was trying to get record deals and stuff, and I was always, like, on the verge of you know, making something happen.
Right.
And I look back, and this stuff was so far away from what the industry wanted. You know, I kept trying to second guess, like, how do I make something
that they...
How
do I make buyers?
Yeah, yeah. How do I, like, make myself fit into this mold? And I realized it wasn't going to happen, you know? And it always is that way. Everything that I do is just enough outside of the standard that...
The realm.
It's just not going to fly.
Because it's got to be standard. No, and I'm sure that a lot of creative listeners can relate to that. We're not... I mean, I can respect all art, but when I turn on the radio... I'm like, okay, there's country, there's rap, there's jazz. They might have Funky Friday. We might get some funk. Like, there's elevator music. There's a Christian station. But there is a whole bunch of stuff that's not getting put out there. And that's kind of why we're making these. We've really learned, I think, as artists and musicians to promote ourselves and to promote what we are. I always say how you can't be Van Gogh in a corner. Van Gogh had, like, his... He wasn't social. He was into the art, and he didn't know how to sell it, and he wasn't social, and he hid in the corner. And I just like to think about how far we've evolved, that we're like, this is what I do, you know? And the industry isn't always, that's like, that's nice, thanks for coming, you know?
Yeah.
My son just did an acting. He had an agent in Phoenix with John Casablanca, and he, you know, had the opportunity to take these really expensive classes, and I'd drive him to Phoenix. And one of his auditions was for Pepsi, and I watched all these little kids... go out there, and I'm like, you know, I drink some beer, and I sometimes have, you know, something that's, you know, fast food. And I don't eat fast food, but something packaged or handmade or whatever. But we're a firm believer in eating healthy at our house and trying to get nutrients. And I watched all these kids go through this audition, and the tiny, tiny little girl is sitting there talking about mini Oreos and how wonderful they are and telling everybody to buy them. And then my son had Pepsi. And he's 11, and he was like, Pepsi, it's not what you drink, or is it? And just the way that they were trying to have these kids sell items that I just don't believe in, right?
Yeah.
And it was a turmoil. We wound up not driving to Phoenix and putting him in more local programs, but going, how far am I going to take it? Like, how far are we going to take it? Are we going to be like, oh, Pepsi, Oreos? Like, we don't want that crap in our bodies, you know? And having to go, well, if my son really wants to be an actor, should I or not? So, like I said, it sounds like you're really balanced in all the areas of staying true to your higher self and your artwork. And you came to Prescott after all of those experiences. You have Kenya, too. I'd love to hear about that. So you came from Kenya. You had an experience there. And then you're in Prescott. And before the show started, we were talking about how you feel about Prescott and how it makes yourself feel in your art form. So if you want to talk about that... That'd be great.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like Prescott is really kind of like a hotbed for creativity. It's, you know, because it's just like the pressure. It's really, you don't do things for success here. Like in New York, people go there to be successful, you know? And like they might be really excited about their art or the music that they want to make. But they know that when they're getting there, what their job is to sell it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And here, it's really not about that. You're doing it for its own sake. I mean, I am, you know? But then again, you know, I'm also trying to make a living, so...
Right, but it is possible. It's not easy, but it's possible, correct, in this area?
It's possible, and the thing is that it's not a very judgmental place. It's not like, you know, you don't get people... telling you that you're not good enough. You get a lot of support here.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of people trying new stuff. And also, because, you know, the community is very strong. It's like just a very strong community. People are very connected. And so it's a great place to start a nonprofit. And so that's what's kind of exciting to me the most is the opportunities for my nonprofit.
That's, I think, a big part of who you are as well, from everything that you're saying about how it makes you feel to be connected to other humans and your community and give them that joy. So tell me about, I can't say it right, Communiki?
See, that's that was perfect.
Oh, you know? I can do it.
Yeah.
I can do it.
That's how people are with music. Like, they'll always say, oh, I can't do it, you know, and then they do it.
It's true.
People have so much, you know, negative stories going on in their heads about music. So that's what we're trying to do. That's the real goal of Communicate, is to get that stuff out of the way so that we can all just get back to playing music together like, you know, the old days, you know, before the music industry came and told us that only these people can do it and the rest of us have to just passively listen and not really participate.
Right, and those are, and it's a not-for-profit, so I think if I saw a flyer, right, some things are charged, but you have some free programs too for children, am I?
Yeah, and it's also, the everything's got a sliding scale to it.
Sure, because you care.
Yeah, you know, we want people to do it. And, you know, it's hard to get people to take that chance with music that all their lives they haven't been. They've been running the story that they have no music. And so to take a chance is really scary.
Right. I heard a lot in my life, I'm not an artist or I'm not creative. Or when I had my pottery shop and we taught classes, a mom would come in with a football style boy that was really into sports and a little girl, and they'd come in and they'd be like, oh, she's super creative, he's just into sports.
Ugh.
Right? Like, you don't need well-roundedness in every direction, you know?
Right.
And so your program kind of brings that out.
Right. You know, and what's really cool, because we do a lot of stuff with kids, but my favorite thing that we do with kids is when the parents come. And so the parents kind of think they're just bringing their child to expand the child's, you know, musical awareness and stuff, you know. But really, like, the kids are generally free of a lot of that stuff. And so they're much more free to just try stuff.
Jump and go.
Yeah, yeah. And just like, oh, strum this chord. They don't care if it's necessarily the right chord.
Because it's already connected to their heart.
Oh, yeah. Totally, man.
They don't have the hang up about making a noise. They're kids, yeah.
Right, because, you know, people are naturally musical. Like, that's what we are, you know?
Yeah.
That's one of the basic beliefs of our organization, is that people are inherently musical. It's part of being a human being.
Right.
And so we're working off of that and then just trying to get it going more in the communities.
These programs, do you ever get parents that steal the drums from the kids and need to bang on them themselves? I'm sure.
Well, that's what we want, you know.
Right.
So what we do is, like, we'll have a circle, and the parents, you know, I invite the parents to sit in the circle, and sometimes, but usually they want to be in the circle. Sometimes they'll sit on the side.
Yeah.
And then often they'll start to come in after they see how much fun we're having and how light it is and how, you know,
right,
non-judgmental.
Right.
I let everyone know this is a music bubble. It's a safe place.
Yeah, no judgment,
yeah,
nothing like that.
No.
I had, with the pottery classes, it was a little bit different where I had to give the parents clay, and I didn't mind doing that, but in the art, visual art world, I tended to have parents that wanted to touch their kids' project, and it's a little different than the music, you know what I mean? Because I was like, that's their project. I don't care if it's a little crooked.
Yeah.
You know? Let it be crooked. Here's some clay for you.
Right. See, I get the same thing, where parents will correct the child, and they'll try to, like, interpret what I'm saying and let the child, you know, like, no, he's asking you to do this. And actually, I'm not asking them to do that. I'm suggesting, and there's a big difference.
It is.
And and then I want to find out how the child creatively approaches that suggestion.
Yeah.
You know, they take it in their own way. And I'm always excited about how that goes. But a lot of the times the parents will step in and try to redirect it
right
in the place that they think they should be going.
It gets frustrating. Yeah, I know I used to have signs that would just say, like, this isn't your project, et cetera. But I can see just from you sitting here that you still get joy out of it and your patience. So definitely teaching is one of your art forms, for sure. So you said you had some activities coming up here in the future. I know, are you standardly the same days at the Raven when you do your music for happy hour?
No, we're not doing that anymore.
Oh, okay.
They stopped the happy hour music.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I
told, they said in the summer they're going to get it going again. We never know about these things.
Right? They just pop up. Well,
they pop up, pop down.
Or someone double booked someone and you don't know if you're going or not. Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's the story of my life. You
right?
Know.
So you did have something in April, and I know you were saying you had something coming up in April that you wanted to talk about.
You know, I actually, there was also the Comusicy thing with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
We have, I could tell you that
absolutely
every first Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of each month, mm-hmm. we have a little play shop for the kids and parents. So, you know, if they go to the website, can I give you my phone number?
Yes.
Yeah, so you could call me. That's a good way. You could text me mm-hmm. and find out more about the kids' play shops. 928-830-4887 and the website, comusicy.org, which I told you before, right?
Yes, I think you did, but it's okay to replug yourself because I'm going to have to go ahead and say that if anybody wants to be on the show or wants to suggest someone for me to interview, and I don't just do artists and musicians, I do people that live a creative life and maybe they're acting on the side in an acting troupe, but they're nurses during the day, who knows? If you want to suggest someone, you can find me at 610-823-3742. I know it's a Pennsylvania area code, but I live here now, even though it's snowing, it kind of looks the same. And my website is Danny Fisher, DaniFisher.com. Oh, no, that's wrong. DannyFisher.gallery. So tell me about Kenya.
Okay, so Kenya happened simultaneously with Music for People, where I, there was a 4-year period where I was going to Kenya and doing this 4-year program at musicforpeople.org where I learned to facilitate groups of people, and that's what got me excited about the whole thing, you know. So like I would be going to Kenya where everybody is musical, you know, there's not any
no hang-ups there.
Well, there's different kinds of hang-ups, different kinds of struggles, but the thing that they got is the music and the dancing. They have Osingolio means music, singing and dancing, and so it's the same thing. They sing and they dance, and they invite people, and I was very much welcomed in to participate.
Yeah.
And I brought that home with me. It's like it keeps their villages strong and dealing with a lot of drought and oppression. And
it's pretty much like religion for them, and I use that word because everybody has a different opinion of it, but that it's methodic. Like they do it all the time. They do it because they know it's helping.
It's part of their life. It's what they're born with, and it's part of everybody's life. You know, the difference is it hasn't been cut out of their lives the way it has here.
Right.
You know, so I learned that because I experienced firsthand what it feels like to have that strength through the community connection, through music.
And was it very poor?
Yeah, I was in very poor.
So what do
villages.
They do for instruments sometimes?
Well, it's really singing. You know, singing, their voices are their instruments.
Okay.
And so dancing and singing and jumping. So
yeah.
Like when they land, that's kind of a percussive quality.
Yeah, like percussion.
It. Yeah, but the singing is very percussive. It covers everything. The it's incredible rhythms, and then they got this polyphonic vocal stuff going
Earthbound
on.
Earthbound rhythms.
It's amazing the complexity of the vocal parts that are happening.
So it's one of your major inspirations. Sounds like those 4 years that you spent there really did so much for you.
Yeah, I'd say between that and the Music for People program, those are the things that really made me feel like I can do more with music. And you know, the interesting thing is that I've kind of always wondered what the next big thing with music would be. You know, like, you know, we had jazz where that changed everything and it was very culturally, you know, changing. And
yeah,
you know, you look through history at all the different forms of music that were revolutions, you know. And I was thinking, you know, like, we've kind of, like, what's going to happen next, you know? And I feel like what it is, really, is everybody playing music. And it's just as kind of button-pushing for people. Because mm-hmm. It's not going to sound like what you hear on the radio. We've gotten so used to this very slick, you know, auto-tuned, perfect, you know, Pro Tools, lined-up kind of music.
Yeah.
That
could be one of the major hang-ups for some people, is because they want to sound like everything else. And, you know, admit it, we're the creative folks, but there are people out there that still struggle with what people think of them and all that kind of stuff, and that could be a major hang-up. I didn't quite think about it that way.
It's just like, you know, the Photoshop thing, you know, where, you know, all the, like, the models and the actors and the, you know, they don't look like they really look like in person. And it's the same with music, you know, where, because there's so much that goes into with the technology that gets so it's perfect.
Yeah.
And so the music that we create together is not perfect in that way.
Right.
And it's a very immediate connection. And the music that I like to do is really improvised. So it's, you could go anywhere with it.
Yeah.
And so it takes a little getting used to for the listener.
Right.
It's different.
Well, and with art, too, the same thing is we learned in art school and all that stuff. They tell you, you know, never paint a black outline around your artwork because it looks like a coloring. Don't do these certain things. These are not the standard ways to do art. And, you know, when you learn and you study and you take the test, then you leave. And I was like, I love black outline. I don't care anymore, you know. But also, sometimes I don't want to go to every gallery and see every show and see what other people are doing, because I'm in my own realm of what I'm creating. And it's not that I don't enjoy everybody else's stuff. And it's not that it's not like you don't always enjoy a radio song that's produced. There might be something cool about it in its own artistic way. But if you get overabsorbed with that stuff, you can't hear yourself.
Yeah. Right. Right.
And they have found the connection between music and math, which they have been talking about that, and I know we all struggle with what they're giving to the kids in schools, but they have, and you're right, I want to see a world, and I'd like to believe in the world where everybody's playing music and everybody's doing art and they don't have any hang-ups, and that's part of why I have this show. But we may very well be getting there. I know that the schools still struggle with funding, et cetera, but we may be getting there, because they have recently, you know, really noticed that kids that are in music are much better at math. They can do, kids in music, there's a chance that most of them can do a Rubik's Cube quicker than the other kids, because there's algorithms in the way you twist it and turn it, and they learned those from the rhythm and the music. That's one of the studies that's out there.
Yeah, if they need a good excuse, go for it.
Got it, right.
To me, you don't need, it doesn't need to, because it makes your math skills better.
You go, put it
because
in there.
Because I think music is more valuable than math, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, math is part of music.
I like that personally.
Yeah, I mean, music, I just feel like it's a necessity.
Right.
It's just like, and all art. You know, it's, again, you know, like the art, visual arts are part of who we are as people, too.
Yeah.
And art is the way we express ourselves on a deeper level than we do through what we're taught in school.
Yeah. You guys, ladies and gentlemen, we're with Jonathan Best here at Cupper's Bistro in Prescott. This is 258 Lee Boulevard. They have a great bistro menu, coffees, teas. They have some kind of funky sorbet things over there, different sweets and whatnot. So we're here using their Wi-Fi when you need to. And we're hanging out with Jonathan Best from Prescott. And we're talking about music being important and the ways he used it in his life. If you want to show support for more shows like this and bringing more arts and music and advocating more arts and music, you can help the Mile High Show by going to themilehighshow.com and clicking on the Amazon link when you do all your Amazon shopping, because I didn't say the. Oh, there's no the. Matt says there's no the. There's no the. It's just mile and high and then dot. Show, milehighshow.com. There's no the. I messed up. And I'm not allowed to say www dot either, because the truth of the matter is that's like kind of redundant anyway. Anyway, we're here. And if you want to help us raise some more funds to keep advocating the arts and music, click on the Amazon link to do all your Amazon shopping. Well, Matt, every time I do this show, you give me
a card. And you never read it.
You give me a card and I never read it. It's milehighshow.com. So, Jonathan, you brought a
beautiful... It's good we can laugh about this stuff, you know, because that's kind of... That's what I'm talking about, you know, with music and life. You know, that music is full of mistakes, and life is full of mistakes. And in music, through improvising, we turn the mistakes into music.
Yeah.
You know, we just allow them to be part of the creation.
Not always, you know, like the picture in your head, but you can still make it beautiful.
Yeah. In fact, there's beauty in it not being the picture in your head, because it's something that you didn't expect. It takes
right.
you to a new place.
Exciting and scared.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it is one word, really. I'm terrified, yeah. but I'm doing it anyway. That's how we have to keep going in this. So tell us about your uke that you brought. It's this wonderful textured instrument that you brought. Where did you get that from?
You know, actually, Dylan Ludwig. You know Dylan Ludwig?
No, is he local?
Yeah, he he actually is running the recording studio at Milagro Arts.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and he donated it to Comusiki.
Oh, wonderful.
You know, a lot of people, this is one of the benefits of running a nonprofit, is that people donate stuff,
yeah.
musical instruments. And so it's really cool. Like, everywhere I go, people say, what is that, you know?
Right.
It's a very interesting thing.
And you're going to perform some songs for us after a short break here. We will get back on and get you to perform a little songs, if you don't mind, with us.
Okay. I mean, actually, I only can think of one that I can play on the uke.
Fine.
Like that I, you know, that I wrote.
Right. I'll settle for that.
Okay.
That's good.
Maybe I could think of other ones.
Maybe. Okay. I know you usually have your equipment when you do your bebop-y stuff, usually.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a brief pause, and we'll be back with Jonathan Best and his performance. Thank you for joining the Mile High Show, Kaleidoscope.
This is a song called Thank God I'm Alive and I Die. It's kind of about this creative process we're talking about, where moving from life and death are just part of creation, I believe. So here we go. I died when I lost my poncho. I died when I lost my mom. I died when I lost your precious love. Thank God I'm alive. Thank God I'm alive and I died. I died when I lost my erection. I died when I lost my home. Then I lost the election. Thank God I'm alive. Thank God I'm alive and I died. When I lost everything I believed, when the rivers of hatred filled up my seas, I waited for love that I could not receive. So I waited for death, and now I can breathe. I died, yes I did. Now I die between every inhale and exhale, every gift I give and I get. And I die when you give me your precious love. Thank God I'm alive. Thank God I'm alive and I die. Thank God I'm alive and I die. Everybody sing along with me now. Thank God I'm alive. Thank God I'm alive and I die.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. Are we good? Do you have any more that you'd like to play, or how are you feeling?
I'm trying to think. I could do a blues.
Blues song?
Trying to think.
We're getting close to the time, and we want to make sure.
How much more time do we have?
You're good on time with us. You're welcome to do some more if you like, and if not, no pressure, because I know you have other.
No, I'm not. It's not about that. How much time do you have? Like, whether we want to talk or play music.
I was thinking we'd do another song. We're at one. Like, I'd probably do one more song and then close with a little more. There you go. The boss said you can do what you want.
We could record another song and you could close with that. They do that on NPR.
Wonderful. Again, this is the... Right. MileHighShow.com. This is your host, Danny Fisher.
I got to think about what that is.
Today we had Jonathan Best on. We're sitting at Cupper's Bistro here on 258 Lee Boulevard in Prescott. They have another one in downtown Prescott on Cortez. Thank you, Cupper's Bistro, for allowing the podcast today. Thank you, Matt Santos. Also, thank you, Jonathan Best. If you want to find out what we do or more shows, it's MileHigh.com. I'm Danny Fisher. I'm MileHighShow.com. I'm going to get fired today because I can't say it right. I'm going here. I just gave away your card to a potential listener. That's the, it's not the, it's MileHighShow.com. And if you, oh no, I pass everybody's card out. I'm kind of like that. Jonathan, one more time, where can we find you again? There's two websites for you.
Yeah, there's JonathanBest.com. www.jonathan.com and there's comusiki.com.org, and that's comusiki, comusiki.org.
Wonderful. And do you have any CDs or anything?
Yeah, you can also jonathanbest.bandcamp.com. You can hear lots of music. I have a whole bunch of music uploaded. I'm working on uploading my 80s music now.
Nice.
Yeah.
Super love the song you just played, too. Would love to hear a blues song. Thank you, Jonathan Best.
Okay, the question is, what I have two possible blues songs, so okay. You pick. One of them is called Going to the Dark Side, and the other one is I'm a Tree Hugger.
Oh.
The Tree Hugger Blues. So Dark Side, Tree Hugger.
Tree Hugger.
Tree Hugger?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I'm noticing something when I start playing, people start paying attention more than they did when we were just talking. So that shows music, the power of music, you know. We forget how powerful music is. I'm a tree hugger, baby. I've been tree hugging since I was 3. Yeah, yeah. I'm a tree hugger, baby. I've been tree hugging since I was 3. Yes, I did. Last night, tree hugging made a fool of me. Yes, it did. Ooh, I'm a tree hugger, baby. Sometimes I take tree hugging just a bit too far. Yes, I do. I'm a tree hugger, baby. Sometimes I take tree hugging just a little too far. Last night, cop caught me tree hugging in my car. Yes, he did. Ooh, yes, let's jam a little bit. Okay, that's enough of that. Let's get back to the song here. I have to remember where we are. I was a tree hugger, baby. But I think my tree hugging days may be through. Yeah. I'm a tree hugger, baby. But I think my tree hugging days are through. Last night, I caught my tree hugging you.